Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will come to order. Any persons with a cell phone or any other audible device, if you silent them now, it's not to disrupt the extra meeting, we'd appreciate it. And if you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let the allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving along now to item number three, this discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for this date, April the 18th, 2017. Mr. Witt, do we have any changes to make to today's agenda?
None that I'm aware of, although Mr. Phillips is standing.
Okay. Mr. Phillips, comment?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners. Mr. Chairman, in regards to today's meeting, Mark Joseph Phillips, Virginia City resident. This is discussion before today's agenda. Wow, the 18th of April, 2017. In regards to my agenda item request, number nine, before you approve the agenda, I want to be specific on the action I'm looking for. I'm looking for a motion and a second by the commissioners that 6 Mile Canyon is open yesterday, you know. Well, when Mr. Kittle and I came in and typed up our request, we were proceeding as though, there could be a huge crowd here today demanding a date and a time when it would be open. So a retroactive date is all I'm looking for. Any discussion about ownership and money spent, those might be questions that can't even be answered today.
Well, why don't we talk about that under item number nine?
Sure. But I just wanted to clarify the motion I was looking for.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Any other public comment on today's agenda? I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda for April 18th, 2017.
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve the agenda for today. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Moving along now to item number four. This is discussion of possible action. Approve the minutes for March the 21st, 2017. Is there any public comment regarding March 21st minutes? Hearing none, motion for approval?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve minutes for March 21st, 2017.
Second.
Moved and second to approve the minutes for March 21st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number five. This is the consent agenda for today. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Mr. Bonner, did you have any questions regarding today's consent agenda? No. Okay. I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Moving along now to item number six. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Start at the right-hand side of the room and start with the Sheriff. Sheriff Antonoro.
Nothing at this time, Chairman. Thank you.
From the DCTC, Mr. Dodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two quick things. One is, when you think about who is the probably the most important person to sell your business, it's probably your customer. Or it's the person that visits your establishment on a regular basis, or maybe even lives right here in your backyard. So with that analogy, we are going to do on May 11th what we call an Ambassador's Day. Basically, we are going to coordinate with the museum properties and a few attractions on an opportunity for folks that live here, that work here, to visit these properties for free on that day. So the VCTC will pick up any needed expenses for that to accommodate that, but basically open it up throughout the day, possibly a little transportation for folks to inform themselves. So the next time they're having lunch, they hear a conversation, they'll be able to say, hey, now you should try this museum or you should try that. Whether it's a waitress or someone who works in the clerk's office or might even be one of the, you commissioners here that need to be brush yourself up a little bit on some of the history you have in some of the museums. A lot of them are have updated their exhibits. They've changed their structure, the way they're doing business, or how they're marketing themselves, and it would be handy for all of us to know what they're doing. And then finally, USA Today has a contest out there for Virginia City. For the actually the most popular town in the Southwest. Right now we're in number three. We're in third place, which is unacceptable. So we got one more week. We need everybody to get online and vote for BC. Other than that, Grand Prix, all locked and loaded. We'll be out notifying street closures, no parking areas to help with that event. And we'll go. So that's all I got.
Any questions for today?
I understand the... The bike racer, they've got a they're allowing quads to run in that this year? Is that right?
I don't know about that, Jack. I do know that there is an enduro section they're putting into that the race this year. What that means, kind of like an obstacle course, if you will, a little bit more than what they normally go through. I don't know the specifics, but I could find out, and I'll get back with everybody on that. Yeah.
Thanks, Danny. Over at Community Relations, Sherry Nevin.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sherry Nevin for the record. In an effort to curb illegal dumping and help our residents with some spring cleanup, Waste Management, in conjunction with Story County, is once again hosting our annual Virginia City Residential Cleanup Days. Those will be Thursday, May 4th through Saturday, May 6th, here at the transfer station in Virginia City. They are open from 8 to 4, and they're closed between 12 and 12:30 for lunch. Additional information on acceptable items is on our website, as well as in the Comstock Chronicle on our Facebook page. So you can take a look and see what you can bring, how much of it you can bring, and what you can't bring. We continue to work with FEMA in the disaster process. It's a long process, I will tell you that, and it's taking a lot of hands, but we are getting through it. And meeting with FEMA seems to be on somewhat of a weekly basis just to kind of get all of our stuff together. So progress is being made there. We've also been working with St. Mary's Art Center and the Comstock Cemetery Foundation and securing some grant funds for those organizations to make some needed improvements to their facilities. So this is a grant through the State Historic Preservation Office, their Historic Preservation Fund. It's federal funds. So we're working with two of these organizations. It's got a large match with it. So we're kind of seeing how we can help these organizations be able to obtain those funds and work through that grant match. Sean Griffin is not here tonight, but I did want to give a kudos to him and his staff. They put on an excellent event Friday night. Pipers was sold-out crowd for the Rodney Crowell concert. So I don't think I've ever seen that many people in the building. It went off flawless. So congratulations to Sean and his staff for that wonderful event. On May 31st, we'll be having an open house for the County Museum. That'll be, it's a Wednesday evening. It'll be from 5 to 7. We'll send out an invitation here shortly. We just secured the date yesterday. So that's a chance for folks to come in and take a look and see what we've done in getting this museum to show and display our county history. So we'll have some light snacks and refreshments, but plan to join us May 31st from 5 to 7. That's all I have.
Yeah. Any questions for Sherry? Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Director of Security, Melanie Keener?
Nothing today, thank you.
All right, thank you. Director of Emergency Management, Joe Curtis?
Mr. Chairman, I'll reserve my discussion until item number 10.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Our IT Director, James Dean?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. James Dean, Story County IT Director. Just a quick update. Don't get a lot of chance to get up here very often. Usually pretty busy, but going to try and change that, be more public-facing, share some more information. As of yesterday, all network links that were down in this town have been fully replaced with all new gear. We have a 100% service restoration and some pretty significant speed increases in network infrastructure that's been built. So yesterday was a major milestone. Most people don't really recognize it, but it's a major accomplishment. We've got some pretty impressive things that I'd like to show off perhaps in the future. I demoed it with the department heads this morning, and it's pretty interesting stuff. So just want to let you know we're back to 100% and hope to keep it there forever. That's all I got.
Perfect. Any questions for James? No? Thank you, James.
Thank you.
With the fire department, Chief Nevin.
Good morning. For the record, Jeff Nevin. As you probably all were aware, there was a minor spill at the Tesla facility yesterday. We were called, went in, mitigated the problem. There was a small drum of cleaning solvent. Posed no threat to the public health or anyone surrounding it. There was a few minor inhalation problems with a couple of employees that went in to clean it up. They were treated, sent to the hospital, and as of last check, they were recovering well with no future or suspected injuries there. So everybody's doing well. The situation was mitigated, and all is well.
Were they Tesla employees?
I'm not sure of that. They were on site. I don't know which company's employees they were.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Public Works Director, Jason Van Havel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you hopefully know, Six Mile Canyon is open. We decided to not wait for the weather to decide to dry up so we can get our pavement down. We opened it up with a couple of gravel areas. I heard back from Federal Highways. They wanted some more information on the request for a permanent fix down in the canyon that included some drainage upgrades. And I'm working on putting that together. And so the nature of the request from Federal Highways, I feel, was very positive, and so we'll keep our fingers crossed. Now that we're able to direct some of our attention away from Six Mile Canyon, we're looking at Loustown and Cartwright of doing some shoulder reconstruction from the events of January. We did some emergency work there initially, and we're doing some more detailed shoulder reconstruction now. But again, it needs to be a little bit dry for us to really make some good progress on that. The summer roads program in the county is going to be focused in Mark Twain this coming year. We're trying to not jump around the county too much, trying to keep the contractor costs low. So for this upcoming summer, we're going to focus on the Mark Twain area. On the buildings and grounds side, we're going to be starting some work here pretty within the next probably week or so on dismantling part of the Black and Howe building. So that way the remaining foundation won't be adversely impacted by the deteriorating wood there. On the sewer side, the sewer project is out to bid right now. We've had some contractor questions. The sewer project is the comprehensive new sewer lines in Virginia City and in Gold Hill. There were a couple of contractor questions, relatively minor in nature. The end of the period for contractor questions is at the end of April, and then the bids are due shortly after that. We should break ground on the sewer project this summer. And so, unfortunately, for this summer and the following summer, there's going to be some adverse impacts on the roads around Virginia City. Part of the contractor requirements, though, is to button up and close up operations so that during larger events, the town can still operate. And as a last item, we're looking at getting a small chlorinating system to put into the water system down near Silver City. Federal regulations require a residual chlorine level in the water, and as the longer that the water is inside of the system, the residual chlorine levels drop. So as water leaves the plant here in Virginia City, the chlorine levels have to be relatively high so that by the time they make it down to Silver City and are used in Silver City, the residual chlorine levels meet the federal requirements. The downside of the current situation is that the chlorine levels here in Virginia City are kind of high. So we're looking at getting a small chlorinating system down in Silver City so that when water leaves the plant here in Virginia City, we can have much lower chlorine levels for the water that's in use in town here. That's it.
That's good. Any questions for Jason?
Last time.
Yeah, yes.
I've seen you've had the equipment out there working on that place by the pond. Okay. So it seems to me that a culvert should be put in there so that pond doesn't run over the road. Is that in the works or planned? Or?
There is a culvert there at the pond.
Oh, is it?
That is definitely worthy of a closer look. There is a culvert there. It's just a little high. And the reason why it's a little high is because there's some rock underneath. And so when it was constructed, the culvert was placed on the bedrock right there. And unfortunately, though, it's high.
It's just plugged up, didn't it?
It handles some of the lower flow, but when the water comes into that pond area, it gets up high enough that it tops the road there closer in and does the shoulder damage. But that is definitely a culvert that we're going to look at trying to reconstruct and try to do what we can somehow to get some of that bedrock out of there and get that culvert lower and address that pond. Yes.
Right. Do we have a time frame on chimney repair on the courthouse?
We're getting bids a week from Friday.
Okay.
So.
We're good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Director of Planning, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I have two things. One of them is a little longer. This Thursday, the Planning Commission will be meeting once again at this location at the courthouse. The agenda will include updates to Title 17 zoning, Title 16 subdivisions, and development standards for subdivisions and for multifamily apartment complexes. This is going to be workshop only with no action, but this is anticipated to be completed by June 30th, and we'll be embarking on a series of workshops to update these codes. Secondly, we have, as you're aware, we have our new health benefits insurance for our employees in place. Everything will actually become effective on May 1st, and our employees know that. We had our presentations here at the courthouse. And just kind of give you a little summary of what happened and what led to what we have. If you understand how claims work, insurance companies are for profit. So they try to, kind of like a gas station, they will try to make a couple pennies for every dollar they get in. They make a couple pennies and they try to keep their profits above their costs. I don't think that's anything really shattering. And so what has happened over the past year or two is unfortunately just because of various things. Our claims experience is a little upside down, and the Affordable Care Act has had some implications that have come in. This is in burst. The insurance company isn't making enough or making money. Actually, they're losing quite a bit. So they came to us and said, well, for next year, we're going to have a 30% insurance premium increase for the county. That could equate to about $300,000 right off the bat. So, and they said, that's it. There's nothing else to look for. So we worked with our insurance broker, Kevin Monahan, from LP Insurance, and we also put an insurance committee together as some of our employees that help kind of represent and talk with other employees and said, we need to do something about this. 30% can't happen, but at the same time, we want to create a pretty general competitive health benefits insurance for the county. So we asked the insurance committee, what can't you live without. And so we talked about it, all the different plans, everything else, and we came up with a package, came back to the insurance company, the carrier, and said, can you work on something to get this premium down? So they came back to us, and in a long story short of a lot of negotiation, we came up with a new plan. So we're still going to be on the Renown system. We're still going to be in the hometown health insurance company. We didn't have a lot of bidding with other insurance companies, so it wasn't much of a choice, but it was actually a good thing to stay on the same company. And so what we can do here is to get those premiums down. Your employees are going to have to participate a little bit more in their plan. And so we created a system where we used to have a PPO, and then we had the HSA option, and the county paid 100% of the premium for those, and then you could choose either one you want. And I call the PPO kind of the nanny plan. It's pretty much everything covered, pretty simple standard plan. The HSA plan is more of the manage your own plan kind of thing. You have an account, you can put money into it, there's tax deferments, there's things like that, or tax sheltering that you can do with it. There's a lot of involvement in the employee and not only how they structure that account, but also who they see as far as their doctors and pay into the plan. So we created what we now have will be the HSA as our base plan. That means every employee in the county will be on a high deductible plan, and then there will be a account, which is the health savings account, that employee can have, and the county continues to put money into that account, and then will also match up to $100 a month for a family to put money into that account. And so we went from a PPO or HSA, whichever you want, to a health savings account HSA as a base, high deductible health plan as a base, and then if you want a more lucrative plan like a PPO that we used to have, or even a more lucrative HSA, then you have to buy up to that plan. You have to pay it a portion of that premium, so it's cost neutral to the county. So this plan has resulted in us, we still went up, but only 6.7% instead of 30%. Substantial savings for the county, a very reasonable health benefits plan for our employees, and being fiscally responsible to the budget and to the taxpayers of the county. So I've always liked an HSA plan. I think our team does, because once again, the employees have ownership in it, in the account. They have ownership in them and how they choose their doctors and how they pay into that plan. It's flexible and allows them a little bit more flexibility in how they run your lives, and it accumulates benefits over time at no cost to the county. And that's really the annual health benefits update I'm providing you.
Great. Any questions for Austin? Good. Great. Thanks for the update, Austin.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Over at the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since your approval of the tentative budget a couple of weeks ago, the audit committee, the department heads have been working very hard to take a look at the deficit that was pronounced at that period of time to try and get that number down to an acceptable budget number. I want to thank the department heads. We've sent out something to revisit all of their budgets. They have corresponded back, and the budget committee is going to meet Friday to look at those areas where we think we need to make some adjustments or can make an adjustments. We will then meet with the individual department heads, go forward, and then hopefully we will have a very different budget for you come May 16th. In looking at the updated numbers for the Department of Taxation, which we did not get until pretty much after the budget session was over, our abatements now are about $5 million. That's a tremendous amount of money for a county of this size. And there were some great questions, both from the public and from you, the commissioners, as to what this number is. We are working with Janet right now, Seaton, our assessor, to take a look at what makes up this $5 million, whether it's abatements, caps, or whatever, and hopefully we're going to be able to do it by district. So that information will be coming. In addition, I'm going to try and make some selections for our auditor, probably May 8th, for your approval on the 16th. There, I have received about five. We'll review all those, go those through the audit committee, and make a selection at that point in time. And our third quarter budget review, I would like to schedule for May 2nd. This will give us a pretty good opportunity just before we hit the final budget deadline. It should give us a little bit of an information as to where we are right now.
Any questions for Mr. Gallagher?
At the last meeting, it was discussed about getting there was a quest to get a list of pending abatements, the status of abatements.
That's the $5 million.
It's $5 million.
I want people. ADS gave us a document that said that there is $5 million, and that flows down from. From what our tax bill would have been and then the abatement less that. What they haven't been able to give me right now is detail for that, and I'm not sure why, because it's obviously, this is a summary statement, and there should be a detailed statement on that, how we take that and mold that within the districts, the various taxing districts that we have, is something that we've got to do.
So I think we're more in line of requesting a list of the companies and what their abatements, when their abatements expire, kind of see where we're standing there.
Yeah, that's.
Is that?
That's going to be part of it. It's going to be by district, so the tri-district will have all of those.
Okay.
It's business and residential.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Fire Chief Ames, did you have anything today?
No, thank you.
Okay, great. And since we have the fire marshal in the audience today, too, Fritz Quinlan, do you have anything today, sir?
Not today, sir. I'll be here.
All right, very good. Thank you. Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
I think Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. I think last commissioner meeting we discussed the issue of Sutro Springs Road, and I had suggested that it looked like that was probably going to lead to litigation at some point. And that has happened. We have received a complaint, a federal district court complaint on behalf of Mrs. Thomas, asking that the federal court declare that the roadway to be her property rather than the public's property. So that process has begun, and we may get the title to that roadway resolved through that process. The second thing I would note is that we had the Supreme Court arguments on the Malfitano case last week, and it has now been submitted for decision, so we should be getting a decision out of the Supreme Court on that case, I'd say within 6 months.
With the Sutro Springs Road there, by them filing with the court, would that stay? Any order that you would give Public Works to go ahead and clear that road?
They have asked for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction to prevent the county from taking any action towards the roadway. That has not been ruled on at this point. So at this point, there's nothing to prevent going ahead with clearing that. But I expect we're going to have a hearing on that issue pretty quickly.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Loomis. County Manager Whitten.
A couple of things, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Good morning. First one, I just want to briefly mention a new partnership that we want to get active in the community. For those of you that know Brian Staples, Brian is post commander for the local VFW. He approached both Chairman McBride and myself a few weeks back, indicating that he was in discussions with Fred Dutton, who owned a 12-passenger bus. Brian was able to convince Fred to give it to the VFW. We're going to work with him and also with Stacy Gilbert at our senior center. It's already either at the shop or headed to the shop for a once-over. It looked to be in pretty good shape the day we looked at it. It's hoped that we can use it to get our vets to and from their appointments. And also, Stacy can use it for the senior center. That's where it'll be parked and based out of. And there may be some occasional use as well. There'll be some sponsorships involved in the bus. Denny and I spoke this morning, you know, about hopefully the Tourism Commission, since this bus is going to spend hopefully a good amount of time down in Carson and Reno. Maybe the VCTC can buy the whole back end of that bus and say, follow me to Virginia City. I know some of the businesses have already offered up. The county certainly will sign up as a sponsor too, somehow, either in kind through our shop or whatever's needed. So I think it's a great program and a great combination of efforts, and I applaud Brian for his leadership on this. Dean Amor is working with the FEMA folks today. If he was here, he would tell you, almost as he always does, in total truth, that things to try are certainly hopping. We have, from what I'm told, within the last week to 10 days, over 18 different plan submittals. Some of those are for ongoing projects, but several are all for brand new projects as well. So things are very, very active out there. Our teams through Fritz and through Dean, Chris Hood, Addie, everybody else out there, Gary on the backside looking at the plans, have been doing just a great job keeping up under almost inundated conditions. So I think I'm glad Fritz and Patty are here today to hear that. That is about all I have except for legislature.
Great. Any questions for Pat? The clerk's office, Wendy Mathis, not here today. Did I miss anybody? Any other directors or staff members? All right, very good. That'll conclude item six, and we'll move on now to item number seven. These are board comments. We'll take no action to public comment. And we'll start at my far left here, Commissioner Gilman.
I have nothing today, thank you.
All right, then I'll move back to my immediate left here. Vice Chairman Ruff.
There was no weekly NACO meeting last week because legislation is everything's is scrambling to get out of committee. And of course, we'll talk about that in the next agenda. So that's all I have.
Very good. All right. I have nothing today. So we'll go ahead and move on to item number eight. This is discussion only and we'll take no action. Discussion and direction to staff regarding legislation or legislative issues proposed by legislators or by other entities permitted by the State of Nevada Legislature to submit bill draft requests or such legislative issues as may be deemed by the Commission or the Board, by the Chairman or the Board to be of critical significance to Story County. Specific bills will include SB 57, which staff has expressed full support, and bills SB 176, SB 244, SB 314, AB 289, SB 271, AB 290, SB 356, SB 469, and AB 384. Mr. Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start, and I believe Mr. Osborne is going to come up. He's working a large double handful of bills, as am I, as are Mary Walker and Bum Hess, working several bills that we won't take time to talk about today. SB 57, I guess all it took was for me to be brutally blunt with, you know, how frustrated I was with Ms. Duncan's efforts to derail this, probably almost upon the slamming or hitting of your gavel to adjourn our meeting. I got an update from the Secretary for the Government Affairs Committee that SB 57 was going to have its work session scheduled the next day. So that was 2 weeks ago tomorrow. It got its hearing. There was an amendment that had been proposed by us that allows the four local governments, the VCTC, the Carson City, CVB, the City of Carson City, and Story County, to either put their directors, their chairmen, their board members, or their designees, and it's loose enough that it doesn't even have to be an employee of the organization if there's a good designee out there for any of those. That was recommended for amendment, and it was amended and recommended for passage. It passed unanimously, and there's a process that I've never really followed that closely down there where, in this case, the Senate committee designates one member of that committee to take that bill to the floor. This bill was so special to Senator Dave Parks from Washoe County that he ponied up and said he was going to take this to the floor itself. I got a status update from Mary Walker this morning. It is on the Senate floor. It could conceivably be passed out of Senate sometime today. So we're back on track and doing very well with that. I want to clarify a few things on SB 438 because there is some inaccurate information out on the Highlands chat room. There is SB 438, is the 5-cent diesel tax. It is not passing the 5-cent diesel tax. It is enabling local government jurisdictions, specifically counties, to enact a diesel tax of up to 5 cents should they choose to. That bill now has an amendment tagged to it that really is benign as far as this commission is concerned, but certainly does come into play for other commissions and boards of supervisors that have more than three commissioners. It will need to pass by two-thirds majority, which is normal for taxing bills. So that's a logical amendment that is on there. And again, I want to point out that this is not enacting a tax on behalf of the legislature. It is enabling each local government to consider it and do as they may. This board may or may not approve up to 5 cents. They could approve a penny, they could approve zero, or they could approve clear up to five. And I think the key distinguishing factor here is this is really only impacts diesel fuel sales. And to be very specific, at least in my opinion, based on the charts I've seen, the bulk of our fuel is coming out of the industrial park at the Golden Gate gas station, that's the fueling station. So most of it would be out there, certainly for those that have a diesel truck that fill up at Bob and Maddie's. If we were to pass 5 cents, might be paying 5 cents a gallon. Currently, we get 4.5 cents on gas sales. We're entitled to go clear up to 9, but we choose not to, much the same as on our telecommunications and electrical franchise fees. We can go clear up to 5, and we're at 2% and 1% on those. So if it passes, this board will have, you know, full say in it through the public hearing process. AB 153, let me back up on the fuel tax one more time. There's been some concerns voiced out there that the cost of goods will go up. Should Little Story County do this? Please keep in mind that Washoe County already taxes. That's where the bulk of the fuel sales in this state occur. And also Clark County already have the ability to not only implement a diesel tax, but also index it as well. AB 153, that was the economic impact study of Assemblyman Daley. That is dead. We hope it stays that way. SB 244 was mostly in part addressing digging in historical areas and prehistoric areas. And thanks to Austin's work and Bum Hess, we got some problematic wording dialed out of that one. So it would be something that Bert at the Comstock Historic District has told me that it's livable, at least on a local basis. It'll probably give the State Historic Preservation Office some heartaches, but that's in their court, not ours. Probably one of my favorite ones to kind of watch is SB 314. This deals with windmills and wind farms. It is Senator Settlemyer's bill that we had some significant concerns, particularly here in Virginia City and Gold Hill, relative to windmills being visible from the view shed. So people that are roaming the C Street can look up and see these big machines. That has now an amendment on there recommended by Clark County, and it passed out of committee with that amendment, which essentially says that so long as they conform to the character of the area. That's something I think we're all very comfortable with. That gives appropriateness, checks and balances with hopefully the CHD, with the Planning Commission, and with the County Commission as we go through the permitting process. There are a number of bills, so I'm not going to single out any one. I'm just going to tell you we continue to track along with the clerks what's happening with our voting machines. Our Sequoia machines are 17 years old, I believe. It's time to change them, but that's also very expensive when you change something on a statewide basis. So we're not only looking at what changes, but who pays for those changes. And then if the sheriff wants to chime in, I believe he's following it, but there are two or three bills out there on body cameras for law enforcement officers. And again, it's, in my opinion, from what I'm being told, it probably is a foregone conclusion. The question becomes, when is that effective? Is it effective July 1st? Is it effective July 1st of 2018? And the devil in the details also is, who's paying for it? So those are being tracked. Last Friday was the day to get out of committee of origin, and that has passed. So that's how bills like AB 153 have died. They never got their hearing, or actually they never got out of committee. And now I believe it's by the end of next week it has to move out of first chamber. And you got to keep in mind we're already 2.5 months into this process, and it's only a 4-month process unless they go into special session. So things are going to happen fast. And I will tell you, based on what I've seen of this session, that Mary and Steve Walker and Bum Hess are definitely earning their paychecks down there this session. So that's my update.
Great. Any questions for that?
No. But yeah, there was well over 1,000 bills submitted, and as of Friday, that was the deadline to get them out of committee. I think 260-some are pretty much tossed out at this point, so there's still over 800 bills, I think, left to go to the next level, I guess.
Yeah, and there's a number of procedures down there that I've learned over the years. First off, the most offset saying is a bill's never dead until sine die, which is the adjournment of the legislature, because they can always be appended into other bills and done like that. And there were a number of exemptions granted on bills, too, that basically says that deadline last Friday doesn't apply. It can roll on and on. So that's it.
You want to follow up, Pastor? Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Thank you, Pat, for the update on those other bills. Here's just a few others, mostly pertaining to the personnel side. We had talked about AB 211, which is triple pay. If you make a mistake in overtime, they want to make it where you pay back triple. Federal is double. It appears to be that as passed committee, but it is for willful violations only, so that's at least positive. AB 267 is workers' compensation bill. This is that the county would award legal fees and court costs and other things to someone who wins a workers' comp case. I tell you, there's a lot of workers' comp cases, and these things get very sticky and very convoluted with other things. This has been changed to the hearing officer only, not necessarily to further action, that we would have to reimburse for costs associated with that hearing. And that has moved on. The AB 271, which is known as the fact finder binding bill, this is the one where we don't go to fact finding after a collective bargaining agreement. If we come to impasse right now, we would go to fact finding. At that point, we could go to mediation, which is no cost, or we could go to arbitration, or we could just agree on something and be done with it. This would make it where that fact finder is actually the ruling party and there's nothing else. This is a huge concern. This has passed to general out of committee. When I say these things are passed, that means they're out of committee onto other things. It doesn't mean they're ratified. This has been amended to apply to general employees only and nobody related to police fire. AB 384 is known as a criminal history bill. This is the one where you ban the box on an application. You can't have the box that says, I have a criminal history background and here's what it was. They would require that we would apply, hear all the applicants, and then at the final stage or at a job offer letter that person has opportunity to then say, by the way, I have a criminal history background, this is what I did. And then it's up to the HR person to come up with whether that crime was a nexus to the job or not. That probably isn't the biggest problem in the bill. The biggest problem is now if you don't choose that person, you have to attach and apply why you didn't hire the person, how come that criminal history is a nexus to the job, and all kinds of other supplementary materials. And that person has a right to go through an appeal process. And from the HR standpoint, it's very uncomfortable and very litigious type of position to be in.
This has moved on. It has passed through committee. It has been changed a little bit. Hold on here one second. To general employees only. This would not apply to anybody in public safety positions. SB 289 is the known as the out-of-network bill. I talked about health benefits a little earlier. We got in-network doctors that have made an agreement with the insurance company, and then we got out-of-network doctors that have not. They would make it where the county would have to allow employees to go to the out-of-network doctors and subsidize the difference in cash. This has made it and passed out of committee, and it has changed where, well, it hasn't changed. It's still moving as it is. This has been referred to finance. So it has a large fiscal note on it. The county, as well as from PERS and other organizations in the state, and they're now doing more fiscal analyses on that bill. And then the last one is a planning one. It's SB 477. This is known as the residential care bill. This is the one that would remove the county's ability to deny a special use permit in a residential zone and to define these uses as residential uses for single family use, halfway houses, drug and alcohol rehab centers, and other such uses, as well as some disabled homes. This has been changed to be for counties of 100,000 or more. And it has changed that the county may consider and look at the land use and deny a special use permit. And it has been changed to, instead of just being 10, it would be 3 to 10 persons in these group homes. And then there have been some changes to fire sprinkler requirements that I wouldn't necessarily speak on. The fire district has provided comments on that fire sprinklers would be required in these for 3 or more persons living in them. There are some water bills in the planning side that I'm not really prepared to talk about right now. There's been a lot of bills that have died, and they're being integrated and kind of morphed into other bills, and I'd be more prepared to talk about that at the next meeting when we know a little bit more how that has happened. Thank you.
Thank you, Aston. Does anyone have any questions regarding any of these bills? Okay. No one's ever seen sausage being made before. The legislature is a good place to sit. We'll move on now to item number 9, discussion only, possible action. Regarding Six Mile Canyon Road, action on actual opening date, monies borrowed to date, and ownership. Item is requested by Mark Joseph Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start, and if we miss anything that doesn't speak to Mr. Phillips' questions. His and Bobby Kittle's request was very similar to this, although Mr. Phillips' request was more encompassing, came in that morning of April 10th, and Jason was posed to go ahead and give it a trial opening later that day. So to answer the first question that Mr. Phillips raised in his request for consideration on this, the Six Mile Canyon did reopen with what I believe to be sufficient advance warnings of graveled areas at 4 p.m. on April 10th, so a week ago yesterday in the afternoon. We had received a sizable amount of complaints as well for the duration, but it was just almost impossible to get down there. And then when you weave in the fact that we're working with the Federal Highway Administration on possible funding for long-term solutions, it's been a process, but it's back open, and the average person that's gone down there is pretty well stunned from what I'm hearing over the amount of work that really needed to be done, not just at the washout spots, but the undermining of the banks. For question number one, it was reopened. That status will remain the same at least until Jason and his crew determine, okay, let's put some asphalt down on it, then it'll have some short-term closures, and hopefully we can announce those in advance. Second question was monies borrowed. That answer is zero. We self-funded through our road budget right now. Obviously, we hope we get some relief from the Federal Highway Administration specifically on this one. I know that NDOT has included it on one of their secondary roads, and Jason's been working with those folks. And the third is ownership. That's probably the most difficult one to answer. This used to be a state route, I think DSR 79, as I recall. And the state abandoned it We're going back trying to find out on a number of roads. Commissioner McGuffey and I, Commissioner McGuffey mentioned meeting with the 1 and 10 acre owners of the Highlands parcels, and we're actually going through and trying to determine who owns what and how we became to own that on the first mile, 1.2 miles of Cartwright, the remaining section of paved, Cartwright beyond pavement, Lousetown paved, Lousetown beyond, and 6 miles on that list too. As recently as probably about 2 weeks ago, I happened to have a nice long chat with Maggie Lowther and Jen Chapman, and Maggie reminded me of something she had done way back in the day. She had done a lot of detailed studying in her time here as the recorder, researching the records. So Jen was in the process of retrieving that document, and then we'll work collaboratively as a team, probably with Jen, with the district attorney's office, with Jason, and we'll be better able to answer. But in the meantime, as far as ownership of 6 Mile, we have presumed ownership, if that's a word, that says we're going to keep responsibility for it just by practice, if not by necessarily legal ownership at this stage. So those were the questions that were specifically asked to Mr. Phillips' request, and if he has anything more, I'd be happy to try to speak, or Jason.
Any follow-up, Mr. Phillips?
I'm happy and everybody's happy. No further comments.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions regarding the 6 Mile Gate? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move on to item number 10. Come on up.
Y'all are killing me. Mark Joseph Phillips, Virginia City resident, 18th of April, 2017. I'm speaking to agenda item number 9. This is discussion before action on the actual opening date of 6 Mile Canyon. I'm looking for a motion and a second that 6 Mile Canyon is open effective a week ago Monday. Well, we're proceeding as if it was still closed. Bobby and I would be here, probably with a lot more people demanding you take action.
Well, I'd suggest to you that we didn't have a motion to close the road. So I
don't know why.
I don't understand why we need a motion to open the road.
Y'all can't just agree that 6 Mile, you're not going to put that on record?
Well, I'll agree with you that 6 Mile is open because it's been posted that it's open.
There's nothing on record that 6 Mile is open. Matter of fact, there's nothing on record.
I don't think we've ever
six miles
been
closed.
It's been closed several times.
Your
before.
County manager has the right to open and close the road. I understand
Mr.
that.
Mr. Phillips, we did post it on our website, on the county website, that it's open.
This is public record. Well, de facto evidence of fact.
Anyway.
Man, my request was specific.
We didn't agendize to go ahead and vote on an open... to open the highway,
our county clerk.
Without it, please let me talk, okay, and then you talk. Okay? It doesn't work well for staff to go ahead and transcribe the meeting if I'm talking and you talk over me. So it's not agendized to go ahead and take a vote to open the road today. So if it's not agendized, we don't vote on it. Okay? Go ahead, you can speak now.
How about a motion and a second to take no action on this action item? No?
I think the action was taken. It was the explanation was given by the
prove
county manager.
It.
All right, we're going to move on now.
Okay.
Item number 10, discussion and possible action.
Yes.
This is the opportunity to be added to the presidential disaster declaration issued for the February 2017 winter storm and the potential declaration of emergency. Joe Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Curtis, Emergency Management, for the record. Well, this is going to take me a couple of minutes here. Fortunately, we don't have the timer on. So, as you're all aware, since January, we've had a significant number of storms and rain and snow and what have you that have created a number of problems for not just Story County, but for Carson and Douglas and Lyon, and now moving forward into Churchill and Washoe, of course, as well. Over the last several weeks, I've attended a number of significant briefings that are attended by as many as 50, 60 people in all realms of dealing with emergencies within the state, to include health and mental health and physical health people, hospitals, Red Cross, and all of the other aspects of other than just response. We had a declaration of emergency for Story County, which included the period in January for where we suffered significant losses to county infrastructure from the rains primarily, and then that runoff, as did a number of other areas. Then as we went into the month of February, our problems in the county began to wane somewhat, and we were able to get a little bit ahead of things and get back to trying to get things back into order. Some of the other counties did not, particularly Washoe County, which meant that they had to declare another emergency for the Swan Lake area north of Reno and some of those dry lake beds. As you're well aware and you see in the paper and so forth, these dry lake beds are continuing to fill. Washoe Lake, Swan Lake, even the dry lake bed out in the Highlands has water in it. Which I've only ever recall seeing one other time, maybe in the early 80s, that had some water in the dry lake bed of the Highlands. Now we are beginning to look at and where the big concern is with what we call spring runoff. In the mountains behind us in the Sierra, we have, and you've probably seen this in various locations, but we have approximately 240 to 250% of normal water content sitting up in the Sierra from the area all the way into the near Susanville, all the way down to the Mono Lake area, the Mammoth area. The two that we're concerned with mostly, or the three actually, would be the water runoff that's going to run into the Truckee, the water runoff that is going to come down to go into the Carson River, and the water runoff that is going to go down into the Walker River area. As a result of that, you've seen that the rivers are already high. The Truckee River is high significantly. It's still over its banks in some areas in Reno, actually, and is going to continue. These briefings that I've been attending are being managed to a great degree by planning personnel in our State National Guard Department that have specialists on planning of these kinds of things. What we're going to be looking at is water runoff that is first and foremost, to the point that if Lahontan were dry today with nothing in it, it has the potential of being filled up three more times. So you'd fill up Lahontan, drain it, fill up Lahontan, drain it, fill up Lahontan and drain it, or keep it in there. That'd be the third one from the watershed up on the mountains. As a result of that, Fallon, as you're well aware, has been preparing for that problem with Lahontan. They are actually building two rivers, two brand new rivers that are being hand dug. I kind of referred to them with my cohorts over in Fallon as the building the Nevada Panama Canal. And that's kind of what they're doing if you see the pictures of them. Carson City is looking at water that will come up to a great degree and cover the golf courses out there on the east end. We'll take a lot of problems there. Fallon has the potential of losing 40 to 60 homes or those homes being inundated. Douglas County is looking at the road 395 from Carson to Douglas County to Gardnerville as being inundated for some possibly as much as 2 to 3 weeks at one point, somewhere between May 1st and July, sometime in July. That will mean if all of these things come together at the same time, which would be creating the problem as a result, if we have 5 days of 75 degree temperatures, we'll say 3 to 5 days, and we're going to have one of those days on Saturday in Reno, it's supposed to be 75 to 77 this coming Saturday. So if we have that, we're going to start having significant runoff. The state of Nevada has placed, has already had, or let me back up, Lyon County has already declared a third emergency for their county relating to the Wilson Canyon and the road going down through to Smith Valley in that area, because that will be all underwater. Churchill County has declared another emergency for dealing with the Lahontan problem. Douglas County is either has or is about to declare another emergency so that they're covered for the problems that will occur in the Douglas County area, because they're looking at the potential of, and then you get into Washoe Lake, that's almost up to the road. You're looking at the potential of 580 being closed, 95 from Fallon, 95A from Fallon, 395 from Gardnerville, 395 between Carson and Gardnerville, and several other roads that could potentially, if this all comes together, could isolate to a great degree northern Nevada for up to possibly 2 weeks. From our standpoint, our big concern would be that of the Truckee River area and the Lockwood area because of the runoff from that. So we're concerned about those areas. As those roads become impassable potentially, we're probably going to have significant traffic occurring here, through here. That's something that we'll have to look at and be concerned with. So it brings us to the point that the state of Nevada is looking to us. We're the last county of this group that has been involved since January, to us to now make a declaration relating to Story County for the potential of anything that may happen along the Truckee or any other runoff problems that could occur. Because these storms seem to keep coming in, these rainstorms, these snowstorms seem to keep coming in, and we don't know how long that's going to be. When we make a declaration of emergency, its impact has to do with whether or not we can get funding from the federal government to help us recoup our expenses. And it means that we expect that we will be running out of our own personal resources to be able to deal with the event. It puts the state of Nevada into the capability of being able to get a third presidential declaration, which brings us more resources and more capability. So what we're looking at this point in time is if we are to at some point, it's not something that we have to do today, but it's something that we might want to be looking at doing somewhere during early May, the middle of May, as things begin to really ramp up, that we may want to declare another county emergency so that we have things in place, because we can't get any refunding or any resources federally for anything that occurs prior to our declaring that emergency. It merely means that we are prepared and we are thinking about we may run out of resources and we want to be covered for those periods of time. When that ends, we just end the declaration. And usually the feds say it's over with and our declaration ends. So what I'm asking or preparing you, the commissioners for, that we may at sometime in early May or mid-May come back in and say it's time that we need to declare an emergency because things are ramping up and it may be something that is going to be in our best interest to accomplish. So with that being said, like I say, it's not something that has to be done today, but it's something that we're going to be watching very closely, and it's very likely, actually the state is actually asking us to do it fairly quickly so that we're all ramped in together and we don't get left out of the presidential declaration. We don't want to be the county that is left outside and all the other counties getting grouped in on the presidential declaration. So I could possibly be coming back and discussing with you within a week's time if the state is really going to be pushing us to make that now so that everything is all grouped in. With that, I would ask if there's any particular questions that anyone wants to pursue. Hearing none,
would this also include private properties?
It would under that you'd have those same potentials for things like Small Business Administration who offers private property things, but similar to what we had to do in January, if we suffer damage, infrastructure, private property damage, then we begin all these same reviews with private property and so forth to be able to gather that information to present to FEMA for potentially help with that. The private property doesn't have that ability to call the county and say, hey, my basement got flooded and damaged. But if we pumped out your basement for some reason, we can probably get some reimbursement for the time and effort and the cost that were involved in helping you survive, basically.
Yes. And if I could add, Commissioner McGuffey, and I'm kind of looking at Keith because we've worked this. Without that declaration of emergency, we actually can't go in and assist with things like pumping out a basement on private property, or maybe a slightly larger magnitude might be more realistic. But, you know, it is that declaration of emergency that allowed us to work hand in hand with the 1 and 10 acre
group, exactly,
through Jason's crew and Gary and Jeff's crew during the heavy snow and runoff. So that's yet another reason why we really need in severe times to operate under some level of emergency so that we can be ready to do that should it be needed.
It's essentially just a piece of paper that says that we have recognized as county government that we are facing a potential problem here that we may not be able to handle by ourselves. And we're establishing this in advance so that As that arises, we have resources available to us.
Okay, well, I think what I was leading to was, you know, we had a couple Highland residents that live in the 40s, and one of them had to be brought out on a snowcat or something.
At his request.
Yeah, at his request, okay.
And then I went
out to look at his road because his road had washed out, supposedly.
Correct.
So, and I almost got stuck out there, so it's a mucky mess. Would it cover going out there and reestablishing that road?
No. That is a private road. It's a private driveway, essentially. That's why we were not able to do anything with that. There are actually state laws that says that we cannot take county government property or equipment and go on to private property and benefit private ownership property. So that becomes the ownership.
Well, that's why I asked if it covers private property.
I'm sorry, what?
That's why the original question was, would this assist private property?
It does, from the standpoint that private property owner has the ability to apply to and through FEMA with their offices, and they have a local office set up right now in Carson that they can apply to, and he's been there.
Oh, okay.
And he's been to the State Insurance Commission at least twice that I'm aware of, because I got phone calls from them. That particular situation is, he said that he had to be evacuated, and that he was required to be evacuated. In that particular instance, in the state of Nevada, you cannot mandate evacuations. The only person that can mandate an evacuation in the state of Nevada is the governor, and he did not do so. So we advise evacuations when we do those. However, in that particular case, he called and made requests specifically to be evacuated, so we did so. And
Joe, I believe those roads that are in question here, Jack,
yeah.
This is for Sergeant Couch, along with an extension to Lousetown,
yeah.
Beyond Cartwright, and both of those roads were repaired by TRI and all of their consultants.
That's correct.
In the last month.
Right. That's correct. TRI came in as his needs to assist him and helped him do that. I believe it was Commissioner Gilman that actually made that possible to help that gentleman out. It was an unfortunate situation in his situation. He was in a private, and he's up there, and he has no resources and very little resources available to him. And it was a difficult thing for him. And unfortunately, the laws are set up so that's private property. And if my driveway was tore up and I couldn't get into the driveway in my house, the county has no responsibility or legal standing to be able to fill in the big hole in my driveway.
Okay. Thanks
I believe the other roadway, Jack, was the extension of Lousetown. Starting at Cartwright by the fire station.
Yeah, we're still looking into the ownership issue.
We repaired that as well.
Yeah. The only way we were able to go in there, along with the cooperation of the ones and tens and their road people, was they came to us and requested this, and under a state of emergency, we looked at it and said, this is a matter of life safety. And then when we get to a life safety factor, then that's when, and that's here again with Mr. Crouch, that it was a life safety that we had to make a decision to go get him. And that's how we did that. Other questions?
So you're not asking us to take any action today, Joe, right? You're just briefing us on what we're going to come to.
That's correct. Basically a briefing on that within the week. After I discuss this with the state emergency management again, they may tell me that you need to do this now because the deadline for us to apply for this is coming up. I'm not sure, but I will get back to you with that information shortly.
I just have a question then. I mean, our staff report indicates that there is a proposed motion on here to move to declare a state of emergency for the time period of February 5 through February 22. Is that needed? Is that?
I think we already did that, Chair.
I don't think on that one.
Not for February.
That's.
We did for January.
Yeah, Chair's got that.
It's been a bit of a confusing process. I don't think we've seen presidential declarations coming through one in a year. Now we're looking at three. So we were on the first one, and that's the one we're dealing with now. The second one in February was basically just for Washoe County, Humboldt, and Elko. The state came back to the other counties that were not included and said, did you guys have any damages during that time, and do you want to be added to the declaration? So it's basically they're adding us in after the fact. We don't believe that we've met that threshold. There's about $14,000 threshold.
14, yeah.
And you've got to be very specific. So we had to have documented damages during that time. What's happening is everything is running together. You know, we started in January and now we're in April, and it's like, yeah, a lot of this was related to January when we got all this snow and all the water came. So I think as far as being added to the February declaration, it's kind of off. Mm-hmm. I think where we need to go is for this potential spring runoff.
Okay.
All right.
You know, because if they do close roads, it's going to impact us and, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Just one last question. Again, I don't know the dates. I'm sure they're documented somewhere through either Jason's efforts or the individual property owner. Would our declaration of emergency during that period of Feb 5 through Feb 22 help folks like Steve Musser that had some significant runoff issues, whether those occurred within that period or not? Would that help him qualify for subsidized loans or things like that?
It would, the SBA. Now, the SBA, you know, he could probably get that because all the snow and everything for the January event. There is a deadline, of course, to apply for all that, but yes, that would be open up. And it's low interest loans. A lot of people that I've spoke to, I mean, it's a process you have to go through. You know, they're not just giving you the loan, so.
Right, it's not a grant process, it's a
it's
loan
not.
Process.
Yeah, it's not.
So if we did a declaration for that period of that February period of time, it would help those kind of things, definitely, but it would give them status. But as a county, we probably did not suffer our threshold figure of $14,000 to $15,000for the county to be able to receive anything. But here again, if we suddenly discover something that occurred during that period of time, we'd be able to put it in there. So I guess you could say if we want to do a declaration that would help cover that would cover that period, that February 5 to 22, I think it is, somewhere in there, it's just a piece of paper. It isn't causing us to become responsible for something, or it isn't going to cause us to be to have to spend dollars someplace necessarily. It just provides for that puts us within that secondary presidential declaration.
Yeah, this is like unprecedented, you know.
And if nothing comes of it, from what if we declare this 5th to the 22nd, included within there, if nothing comes of it, nothing comes of it. It just doesn't impact us.
So, staff recommendation that we go ahead and do this or not? I mean,
yeah. Like Sherry said, it's one of those things. I would say yes. I would recommend that we declare that period at 5/22, and enter into with that presidential declaration. It may not impact us. It may not do anything for us. It's like I say.
I do have one question. And I know this is not fire-related, but back in the day, if we were indiscriminate in our declarations of FMAGs, fire, you know the acronym, I don't, but if we were indiscriminate in that, that was viewed negatively by those up the food chain from us, be it, in this case, state DEM. Is there any potential for that, or is it, I think I heard that the state is actually asking us to consider declaring.
They're the ones coming to us, asking us to do this.
So they came to all the counties that did not declare during that February time and said, you have the option to be added, basically after the fact. So it's different than we typically operate. That's why it's like, okay, I mean, usually when we declare a state of emergency, we're declaring it on this day because it's hit us. You know, we're not going back and looking at it. So
I'd have a tendency to concur with Joe and Sherry that if the state's asking, we should oblige. You know, I mean, it's probably not really our emergency, like you say, but...
Right.
Even if it helps guys like Steve, you know, with a little relief that he might not have had otherwise.
All right. So, this is staff recommendation. Okay. So, why don't we go ahead and we'll open up for public comment on this? Anybody has any comments on this? No? Okay. Well, it's quite the synopsis there, Mr. Curtis. So, Sorry, that said, I look for a motion on this.
As written.
Yeah.
Yeah, I move to approve declaring a state of emergency in Story County due to a severe weather event for the time period of February 5 through the 22nd, 2017, and the potential of additional flooding due to the projected spring 2017 snow melt runoff.
Okay. A motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We moved in a second to go ahead and approve the declaring of a state of emergency for Story County. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. All right.
Thank you. And we'll get with you, Keith, on that paperwork.
Okay.
Thanks. Moving along now to item number 11, discussion and possible action. Approval of Resolution 17-454. Declaring May 2017 as Wildfire Awareness Month in Story County. Must be a pretty big deal. We got three of them up here.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Fritz Klingler, Fire Marshal with Story County Fire. I'd like to introduce Jamie from Nevada Cooperative Extension, and I've got Patty Blakely up here, too. This really backs up kind of nicely with Joe's item number that he just discussed about the flooding, just because there is a potential for, with all of the rain and moisture that we've gotten over the last few months, that we're going to have an increased growth of cheatgrass and flammable combustible materials. So we've worked very closely with the Nevada Cooperative Extension in the years past, all the way back to 2006, in making these proclamations and declaring the Wildfire Awareness Months and helping educate our public and give them the materials that they need to reduce these risks on their properties. And without the Nevada Cooperative Extension, we wouldn't be able to do this just because of funding and the materials that they provide to us. So they're extreme great value to Story County and the community. So with that said, she's going to read the proclamation to you guys, and we would like to ask that you guys sign it today, and if we could just borrow a couple quick minutes of your time and get a picture with the commissioners and the Nevada Cooperative Extension Group. We've also got, I've got Lindsay out here and Sonia. They're also two really big assets for us. And then I've got some brochures, too, if there's anybody in the public that would like information. And then I'd like to remind everyone here that for all Story County residents, we've got the You Call, We Haul trailer program. It's 100% free to anybody that lives in Story County. We'll come. All they have to do is call us up, schedule a day and a time to drop the trailer off. They load it up, and when it's full, we come pick it up and dump it. It can only be like vegetation and that sort of thing. You can't throw any trash or lumber in there. But again, it's completely free to the community. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Patty.
Okay, so we have a Story County resolution in support of Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, May 2017. Whereas wildfire significantly impacts Nevada's environmental, economic, and social well-being, and whereas homeowners should ensure proper management of vegetation surrounding the home and appropriate home construction and maintenance to resist ignition. Whereas residents can save precious time in an evacuation by preparing a to-go bag and family evacuation plan ahead of time. Whereas communities should create well-designed fuel breaks, ensure good access for emergency vehicles, and consider multiple evacuation routes. Whereas residents should evacuate immediately and when asked by emergency responders. Therefore, it is proclaimed that the Story County Board of Commissioners, Board of County Commissioners, supports the month of May 2017 as Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, and this year's theme, Wildfire, Prepare, Anticipate, Evacuate. as a means for education and a call for residents of Story County to take action to reduce the wildfire threat and prepare their homes, families, and community for wildfire. Also anticipate a possible evacuation and to evacuate their homes when asked.
Thank you, Patty. So, go
ahead. For the record, my name is Jamie Royce Combs, and I am the outreach coordinator with the University of Nevada Cooperative Extension's Living with Fire program. And I'll just go over really quickly our theme for this May, and it is wildfire: prepare, anticipate, evacuate. And so residents can actually prepare by doing things such as creating defensible space around their homes, using fire-resistant building materials. They can prepare a family evacuation plan. They can actually also do proper access for emergency responders to get to their community or to their home. To anticipate for wildfire, residents can actually check their to-go bags and make sure that they have a disaster supply kit, and they can know their family evacuation plan. And for the evacuate portion, residents can evacuate quickly and safely when asked. And so during the month of May, we are collaborating with Story County Fire, and we are going to be at Hillside Elementary on May 17th and Hugh Gallagher Elementary on May 25th for fire prevention as well as teaching children about the Ember threat. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jamie. Good. Is there any public comment regarding this resolution 17-454? Hearing none. If I get Commissioner McGuffey to go ahead and make a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 17-454, declaring May 2017 as Wildfire Awareness Month in Story County.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion, a second, to approve resolution 17-454. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. You want to get a picture? Did you stay there, Fritz?
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.
Okay, moving along now to item number 12, discussion and possible action. Amendment to the general business license for Richard Connell from the Firehouse Creamery to the Firehouse Barbecue. Business is located at 171 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada. Sheriff.
This is simple, just restructuring. He's changed around the way he's doing business. Of course, he has Mellow Fellow he rented out. Now he's getting rid of the what's been called the creamery, so basically it's moving all his licensing just to the barbecue stand that he's operating. So not a change in anything, just condensing.
Any questions from the commissioners on this? Any public comment?
Yeah, just an item to note. I believe we do have a second reading on another business at that property, which would be the Silver Spoon.
Right.
I don't have my letter.
That's number T. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Item T on the second readings. Yeah. Which Silver Spoon used to be the creamery, now it's Silver Spoon. So. No public comment. Okay, we can get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve and amend to the general business license for Richard Connell at 171 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, from Firehouse Creamery to the Firehouse Barbecue.
Motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and second for this amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 13. Discussion of possible action. Approve the second reading for the general license for the Gold Hill Hotel and Crown Point Restaurant, 1540 Main Street, Gold Hill, Nevada.
We've got another item coming up as far as their liquor license and everything, but as far as their general licensing and everything, pretty standard operation.
All right.
And I might add, relative to both this operation and the liquor license subsequent, Sheriff Antonaro sent me a very good recap yesterday afternoon that I neglected to share with either the board or the clerk. So when you see that, I've also provided it to the clerk for public record.
Okay.
I was just going to save that for the liquor portion, but that's fine.
Since this is the second reading for the general, any reason why it wasn't just included with all the regular business licenses for the second reading?
I think part of this is because if there's a liquor license, then the sheriff's office handles everything.
Okay.
So what you usually see on Stacy and Sarah's list are the ones being processed through community development.
All right, I think you've explained that to me before. Yeah, great. Any public comment regarding this? Hearing none, get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve Patrick McNamee, business owner, the second reading of the general business license for the Gold Hill Hotel and Crown Point Restaurant, located at 1540 Main Street, Gold Hill, Nevada.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved in a second to approve the second reading for Gold Hill Hotel, Crown Point. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Item number 14 will recess as the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the Story County Liquor License Board. Bring us on to item number 15, which is discussion and possible action. Amendment to the liquor license for Richard Connell from Firehouse Creamery to Firehouse Barbecue. Business is located at 171 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada. So,
as stated under item number 12, there's no real change other than restructuring, relocation within a few feet of his business. So it's the same license he's been running under.
Right. Moving at 100 feet.
Yep. That's it.
Any public comment regarding the liquor license for Richard Connell? Hearing none, motion.
I'll make a motion to approve an amendment to the liquor license for Richard Connell at 171 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, from Firehouse Creamery to Firehouse Barbecue.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moving a second to go ahead and approve the liquor license for Richard Connell. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 16, discussion of possible action. Approve the second reading for the liquor on-sale license and cabaret license for Gold Hill Hotel and Crown Point Restaurant, 1540 Main Street, Gold Hill, Nevada.
We've completed a background investigation on the applicants. They have a background in business. They seem to be pretty interested in growing with the community, I guess. They will be living on site at the location, which will be a kind of a new feature from what we've had the last several tenants down there. They are going to be operating it for the time being under a lease from Comstock Realty, CMI. I don't know how that all structures together, but Comstock Realty is what the lease is under. Nothing in their background would preclude them from having a business license or the liquor license. So I would recommend approval of the license.
Very good. Yeah. Any public comment regarding this? Hearing none, I get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve Patrick McNamee, business owner, the second reading of the liquor on sale license and cabaret license for the Gold Hill Hotel and Crown Point Restaurant, located at 1540 Main Street, Gold Hill, Nevada.
And we don't have proximity, but it's called the...
Sure, you're voting on these liquor licenses?
Yes.
Where are we at?
I had a motion. I made the motion.
Did I get a second?
Second.
We moved a second to approve liquor license. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. All right. Item number 17 is to adjourn as the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners. Item number 18, discussion of possible action. Possible action for first reading of Ordinance 17-274 to repeal Chapter 8.32 of Story County Code addressing hazardous materials and toxic substances.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Loomis, Story County District Attorney's Office. This is a continuation from the last meeting that we had, in which both Joe Curtis and Gary Hames had conferred that this was an appropriate way of addressing Chapter 8.32. And so this is the opportunity to have the first reading, and if you're prepared, I would go ahead and read the title in.
Go ahead.
This is Ordinance Number 17-274. It is an ordinance deleting Chapter 8.32 to the Story County Code, which addresses the presence and use of hazardous and toxic materials in Story County and providing other matters properly related thereto.
This is our second first reading, right?
Yeah, this is first reading.
Yeah, it's our second first reading.
Oh, is
we
it?
Had it? We had it at the last meeting, too.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Okay, any public comment regarding the repeal of this ordinance? All right. Motion for approval.
As a first reading or a second reading?
First reading.
This is a first reading.
Oh, okay. All right. I move to hear the first reading of Ordinance 17-274 and to require publishing and hearing of the ordinance as required by statute.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We moved a second to approve the first reading of Ordinance, the reappeal of Ordinance 1, excuse me, the first reading of Ordinance 17-274 to repeal Chapter 8.32. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you, Mr. Loomis. Moving along now to item number 19. This is discussion of possible action. These are the business license second readings. Mr. Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of Community Development, we are asking for approval of all items listed on the agenda A through Y. Specifically, those are Soul Hospitality, LLC, doing business as the Soul from Soul, Baxter & Son Mechanical Company, Dose Company Limited, Squaw Valley Ski Corporation, Rep Plumbing, LLC, Mino Automation USA, Phoenix Installation and Management Company, Inc., Nikon Meteorology, Inc., Cardinal Contracting, LLC, East Fork Roofing, LLC, Variation Reduction Solutions, JSJ Ventures, Inc., Mercier Elect and Mechanical, Inc., CSC Service Works, Inc., Team Technique, Mass Chinnen und Alagan GmbH LLC, and if anybody's got a better pronunciation, that's item O. Odawara Automation, Inc., RSI Installations, Inc., Derek Jonathan Murillo Vasquez, contractor, Full of Heart Spiritual Healing, Silver Spoon Eatery, Pacific Integrated Handling, Ines Group, LLC, Pinta Building Group, King B Construction, Inc., Team Technic Productions Technology, LLC. That's it.
All right.
Apparently, Mr. Osborne. Yeah. I've cleared him. I've cleared him.
Okay.
Yeah. I got your note, but I talked to Sarah.
Great. Any public comment regarding the business license second reading? Hearing none, looking for a motion to approve all 25A through Y.
I'll make a motion to approve all business license second readings for A through Y.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Move the second to approve all business licenses A through Y. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Move along now. Correspondence.
I think the only matter of correspondence, Mr. Chairman, is I believe we have Bobby Kittle's. Take a look here to verify. Bobby Kittle made a request very similar to Mr. Phillips. I called Bobby, told him we were going to hear it under Mr. Phillips' item, and then I called him later in the day and told him Six Mile was open, and he was a happy camper.
Okay.
So.
Very good. Everybody's happy now that the road's open. Okay. Moving along now to item number 21, public comment. Any public comment today? Sheriff?
It's not really a public comment, just to clarify the record under item 16. I said that Gould Hill was going to be operating under a lease from Comstock Realty. It's actually Comstock Real Estate, Inc. So just to clarify the record so there's no question down the road.
Very good. Thank you, Sheriff. Ms. Bart?
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. When will all of the detail on the Google purchase be public? The price for the parcel, the abatements, all of that?
I'll take that first as staff, because from a county perspective, I can still sit here and say exactly what I said to the media yesterday. I can't confirm it's Google. You know, if it is, great. Joe Hart from Channel 4 is reporting that a representative from Google did get in touch with him and say, yeah, it's Google. My understanding, again, mostly based on what I'm reading in the media, because I've had no discussions with either the Silver Slate people or Google or really anybody, is it would seem to be what you read in the press is somewhat accurate, and I say specifically in Channel 4's release. I mean, the Wall Street Journal and others, I think, are ripe with speculation. So the full terms of any deal is what they appear probably in the recorder's office right now, is there was a transaction done Friday. And there's a process for the recorder to release those documents, and whether it's Google or not, we'll see.
Okay. Well, whether it's Google or any other company, when do the abatements and the deals on bringing these companies in, when does that get public from the governor's office?
I guess when there's either application or applicability. There are a number of abatement programs out there. If they create an EDD, that legislation's already there. It's again, in my opinion, speculative, because we don't even know what they're going to do to know what abatement products or processes they might be eligible for.
Okay, so you're saying as of today, and based on what you know, there is no abatement?
That is correct.
Okay.
I might make a comment, Pat. The sellers and all associated consultants, and including Story County, are under an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, that have been specifically requested by the buyers, and all entities are on hold pending the company's formal announcements from their corporate chair through our governor's office. And so until that time, there can be no discussion regarding the transaction.
Okay, but once it is announced, then there should be transparency on everything that led up to the relocation. And again, just like with Tesla and other companies, what abatements the state has given them, correct?
I missed
it's
the last
public,
part.
It should be public record, right?
The transaction will be a private transaction between the seller and the buyer, and all transactional documents have been folded into a non-disclosed folder. The items that will be available will be those public items that have been recorded on behalf of the transaction. And that'll be the status of the transaction up to and until such time is there a formal announcement by the company? At this point, I believe you asked, there are no packages submitted to the state. The buyer has asked for no offsets of any kind or specialized entitlements. And so the transaction at this point is on hold in the public realm.
On hold?
From information.
Okay, so the information is masked unless and until it's...
It's a private transaction between a buyer and a seller within the county. All public documents are available. There is no other information available.
Okay, and to restate, they have not requested any tax considerations, fee considerations, services considerations, anything out of the ordinary. They're just buying a piece of property, going to build it, they're going to pay taxes like everyone else.
And at this time, there's no information on that basis except an article that was written by the RGJ purportedly from an announcement by the governor. And that came out, I believe, yesterday. And the governor's office confirmed that there had been no requests for tax abatements.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other public comment? That's it? This meeting is adjourned?
I don't know. It's governor. I've never talked.